Good morning, everybody. Today we have the pleasure to interview Dr. Francesca Del Bufalo from the Department of Pediatric Hematology and Oncology and of Cell and Gene Therapy of Bambino Gesù Hospital in Rome, Italy. And we will talk about the paper recently published on the New England Journal of Medicine entitled GD2 CAR-T01 for relapse or refractory high-risk neuroblastoma. So first of all, thank you very much for accepting our invitation, Francesca. How are you today?
Hi, Carmelo. Hi, everyone. Thank you for the invitation. Everything is fine, and I'm thrilled about this small session about our paper.
So let's start giving a very brief overview on neuroblastoma and the application of CAR-T in solid tumors beyond hematological malignancies. Can you give us like a brief vision at a glance of what's going on?
Yeah, sure. So neuroblastoma is actually one of the most common pediatric malignant tumors. It's actually the first extracranial malignant tumor of the pediatric population. And it's a very peculiar tumor, I would say, because it has a wide range of biological behavior. It can go from some forms which spontaneously regress, so in which we just observe the patient and then the tumor differentiate and regresses by itself, to forms that are very aggressive and highly deadly. Unfortunately, around 50% of the children with neuroblastoma have an aggressive form of neuroblastoma, which is already metastatic at onset, or which expresses some genetic alteration which are associated with an aggressive form. And for this population of patients, actually, with a very intensive first-line treatment, only about 40 to 50% of the patients can achieve a durable remission of the disease. Therefore, there is a 60% more or less of patients that need innovative approaches. And for these patients, currently, the prognosis is very grim, because about 10% of the patients can respond to a salvage therapy. And overall, this population of patients accounts for around 10-11% of the pediatric deaths for cancer. So it's a very important unmet medical need. And for this reason, we have developed a CAR-T cell approach for this patient. Overall, CAR-T cell, as we all know, have obtained remarkable successes in the hematological fields. But to date, the successes in the solid tumor field has been lacking behind for several reasons. So developing a strategy that is effective for solid tumors has several challenges. First of all, finding a suitable antigen to be targeted is not an easy task, because as you can imagine, a solid tumor derives from its normal counterpart. So finding an antigen that is expressed only on the tumor and not in the normal counterpart can be tricky, and is tricky for most of the tumors. And moreover, the solid tumor in general has high heterogeneity. And so you can find cells that express a certain target antigen, but other cells that do not. And this is an intrinsic mechanism that can lead to failure of the approach. Then the solid tumor, as compared to the hematological malignancy, has a very complex structure, not only in terms of architecture, because it contains a lot of fibroblasts and fibrous tissues that impair the penetration of the CAR-T cell inside the tumor. It also has the tumor in the solid mass has the ability to hijack the immune cell of the tumor, rendering them immunosuppressive. And there are a lot of immunosuppressive cells and soluble factors inside the tumor that impairs the activity of the CAR-T cells. The matter would be very, very large, and we don't have the time to discuss all the issues of the solid tumors, but this accounts for the poor results that so far in the field we have obtained.
But it's incredible that you have made it, like the first attempt to overcome these issues, and with great results. So can you explain us the trial design and the specific product that you infuse and its characteristics?
Yes, with pleasure. So, first of all, we largely characterized our products before getting into the clinic in a large preclinical study, where we, for several years, we compared the several constructs, both second generation construct and third generation construct, meaning either containing one or two costimulatory molecules. We, after this large evaluation, we came up with a construct which, in our view, was the most promising, and it's very nice to see that it turned out to be the right choice. So it's a third generation construct which contains CD28 and 4-1BB as co-stimulatory molecules. And moreover, we set up the manufacturing process using IL-7 and IL-15 as cytokine cocktails, because it has been proven largely now in the literature that this combination is able to favor the expansion of the more naive central stem memory proportion of the cells, which are those that can enable the persistence and the memory after infusion in the patient, so the durability of response. So after this preclinical evaluation, we developed the phase 1, phase 2 clinical trial, in which in the phase 1 portion of the study, we had a design that was quite new. So in order not to start treating patients with a dose that we felt was too low to be able to obtain any results, we designed 5 dose levels, but we started from the third dose level, so the intermediate dose, which was 3 million of cells per kg of patient body weight. From that point on, we were able to either escalate according to a classical 3+3 design in case of no occurrence of dose limiting toxicity, or de-escalate to lower doses in case of occurrence of the dose limiting toxicity. In this way, we avoided to provide a low dose of cells to a proportion of patients that could not obtain probably significant results with too low doses. What we did then was to escalate. So we started with 3 million. We didn't observe any DLT. So we escalated to 6 million and 10 million of transduced T cells per kg of patient body weight. And we didn't observe, we observed, of course, a classical toxicity, which we will discuss about probably later, but we didn't observe any dose limiting toxicity. Therefore, we set the 10 million of cells as the recommended dose for the phase 2 portion of the trial. We then moved to the phase 2, which is the preliminary evaluation of efficacy of the approach. And in that portion of the study, we enrolled, so the study overall was able to enroll up to 32 patients in the phase 2 portion. And the analysis that we published in the New England Journal of Medicine was referring to the first 27 patients overall, therefore 21 in the phase 2 and 21 in the phase 2, including the 3 patients treated at the maximum dose level at the phase 1 and 6 more patients treated at lower dose level. And this is overall the design of the study.
I see. And which type of patient were this one that you enrolled? All refractory to multiple lines? Can you describe some a little bit their characteristics?
Yes. Of course, as every new drug, we couldn't start treating patients in earlier phases of disease. So all the patients that we enrolled were highly refractory relapse patients. So the median number of treatment lines that they received was 3, with patients having failed up to 6 lines before treating the treatment with our CAR T approach. Only one patient was treated in non-evidence of disease at the end of the first line treatment, and this was a possibility that we had in the phase 1, in the phase 2 portion of the trial. We had included, since a significant proportion of patients at the end of phase 1 of the first line treatment unfortunately relapse, especially patients with some characteristics which are called the ultra high risk patients. So we decided to invest on implementing the consolidation of this proportion of patients by providing GD2 CAR T cells at the end of the first line. And so in the interim analysis that we published, there is only one patient in this cohort, but we are now enlarging it. So it's a single patient that after the first line was in an evidence of disease. All the other patients had failed multiple lines of therapy. And conventionally, for these patients, the proportion of survival is below 10%.
I see. And did you notice difference with regards to infusion safety of this product as opposed to other CAR-T that we commonly use in B-cell malignancies?
Actually, thank you for this question because it's an important point. Before starting the trial, we were quite scared because it was the first time that a third generation construct was used in the clinic. During our trial, then a study from Baylor has been published with the third generation construct, but when we started, we didn't know about that. And so for this reason, we included in the construct a second gene, which is a very important, which is a safety switch. It's called inducible caspase 9, and it's a caspase that has been modified in its binding domain so that it doesn't bind to the conventional upstream caspase, but it's bound only by a drug that we can administer upon need, which otherwise it's inert, it doesn't have any other function. But when we administer it, it binds to this caspase and induces the apoptosis of the T cells. So it's a very powerful tool to control the toxicity. We included it because we were quite afraid of the toxicity, especially neurotoxicity or ICANS. Indeed, with our positive surprise, the toxicity profile that we observed was absolutely superimposable to what we have observed with the second generation construct commonly used in the hematological setting. So 20 patients out of 27 developed the cytokine release syndrome, but in 19, so almost all the patients had only grade 1 or grade 2 toxicity, which was represented mainly by fever and a minor need of oxygen supply or fluids to help keeping the blood pressure to normal levels, but no more than that. In one patient only, we had a grade 3 cytokine release syndrome, which was characterized by important drop in the blood pressure requiring vasopressors and a respiratory failure requiring CPAP, sustained with CPAP. And that was the only patient who was rescued actually with tocilizumab. So it was very easily managed. Actually, we activated the inducible caspase 9 in one patient because she developed an altered state of consciousness. And so the first thing that we did to manage it was activating the suicide gene because we thought it could be neurotoxicity associated to the infusion. Actually, the subsequent workout revealed that it was a brain hemorrhage, so it was not linked to the CAR itself. However, this gave us the opportunity to test the inducible caspase 9 gene, and what we saw is that we had a sharp drop of CAR T cells immediately after infusion, just 4 hours after infusion of the dimerizer. And then the CAR T cells remained to very low levels for 4 weeks after activation of the suicide gene. But interestingly, after 4 weeks, we had a reoccurrence of CAR T cells. They peaked again, reaching almost 100 cells per microliter. So they had quite a strong peak. And then they remained detectable for long term. Now the patient, it's 4 years after infusion. The follow-up is of course longer than that we published in the New England, and she's still in complete remission. So that's a good thing. And the other important toxicity that we have seen, it's hematological toxicity. All the patients develop cytopenia, but this is this happens normally immediately after lymphodepletion because these are heavily pretreated patients and often neuroblastoma involves the bone marrow, so it's not unexpected, and it's more or less comparable anyway to what we have seen with the CD19 targeting CARs.
Thank you, Francesca. And how did the patient respond to the CAR T infusion? And I'm curious, what was the result specifically on larger masses? Was there any difference according to the specific organ involved?
Yes, thanks. This is a very important point. So remarkably, we obtained a 63% overall response rate, meaning that 9 patients obtained a complete eradication of the disease, 8 patients obtained a partial remission of the disease. So it's a very important result considering the type of tumor. We were able to observe these important responses also in bulky masses. So what we have seen is that patients with having bulky disease, which means a disease that has a diameter larger than 5 centimeters, so big masses, they had an important reduction, obtaining almost all of them a partial response. So more than 50% reduction of the volume of the tumor. So it is an important result. But we need to. What we have found out during over time is that patients that are treated with a high disease burden, which we defined as the presence of either a bulky mass with a diameter above 5 centimeters or the infiltration of the bone marrow above 50%, or the presence of more than 7 spots at the MIBG scintigraphy that it's usually used to identify the sites of a disease in this patient. Well, in this cohort of patients, even if we can see a good response with CAR T cells, including 2 patients obtaining complete remission, what we see is that over time, despite CAR T cells being still circulating, they lose response and the disease comes back. Importantly, when the disease comes back, these CAR T cells do not re-expand and obviously are not able to control the disease any longer. And so this is so important that we have seen a difference in the survival between patients that have a high disease burden and those that do not have a high disease burden, that despite the study not being powered to detect the differences in subpopulations because the study number is very low, still, we could observe a very highly significant difference. Patients treated with low disease burden could obtain a 58% of 3 years event-free survival, which is absolutely remarkable for this population of patients, whether patients with high disease burden had a 0% of survival so long. Whereas the overall cohort, not stratified for the disease burden, could obtain, for the patients that were treated at the recommended dose of 10 million of cells, could obtain a 36% of a 3-year event-free survival, which still is remarkable if you consider that for this population, the event-free the long-term event-free survival is 5%. So the difference is huge.
Thank you. And so this may argue for perhaps an earlier use of this product in the future, right?
That's absolutely the way to go, and that's what we are moving in.
I see. So, and how about instead the median life of these CAR T cells? Did you notice perhaps any loss of GD2 expression in non-responders? I'm asking you this, like mimicking and borrowing the experience with B-cell malignancies, of course.
This is, of course, one of the questions that we asked ourselves, because that is one of the mechanisms well known for CD19, but actually, we were quite surprised to find out that GD2 is not under regulated in patients that lose a response. They still have the same expression of GD2 on their tumor cells, and so this is not the mechanism of failure of this product. At least in our cohort of patients, of course, we need to enhance the numbers, but to date, this is quite important, and this is proved also by the fact that. We stratified the response also for the previous treatment with the monoclonal antibody directed towards GD2, which is commonly used in the first line. And we didn't observe any difference between patients that had been treated with GD2 monoclonal antibody and those who didn't. So this means that it's not really the antigen the issue. The issue is probably related to the immune suppressive microenvironment of the tumor. And you asked me another question, but I forgot.
Median half-life of the
median half-life. Yeah, that's true. So if we to evaluate the median half-life, that was quite difficult for us because in 11 patients we administered multiple doses of CAR T cells. Therefore, we didn't want to trick the results by calculating overall the median half-life including those patients that were having multiple infusion. In order to be as fair as possible, what we did was when patients was receiving a second infusion, we considered that as the end of the life of the CAR T. So most of these patients received the second infusion 3 months after the first. And so this kind of pushes a bit our results towards a median life of 3 months after infusion. But in those patients that have longer follow-up, we have seen in a high proportion of patients a persistence of T cells up to 4 years after infusion. So they can persist very long in those patients that do not relapse subsequently.
I see. Thank you. And well, that's a brilliant result. It's very impressive. So now a personal perspective. What's next? Do you envision application of CAR T also beyond neuroblastoma, like to other solid tumors?
So we are working very hard. And of course, the ways to go are multiple. For sure, for neuroblastoma patients, what we are now working on is to infuse the T cells in an earlier phase. As I was mentioning before, we want to enlarge the cohort of patients that receive CAR T cells at the end of first line in order to consolidate the result and see if we can reduce the rate of relapse of these patients. And besides this, we are currently treating patients that are even relapsed patients, but they have that have a low disease burden. What we know now is that with a high disease burden, it's useless to administer CAR T cells. This is one of the points. Another important point is that, of course, we are studying the mechanisms that are inducing this sort of loss of function of these T cells, which is not related to exhaustion because our T cells do not express exhaustion markers. We are studying the mechanism. We have identified some population of immunosuppressive cells that are highly correlated with the loss of function of CAR T cells, and therefore we are moving forward with our preclinical lab to develop an approach that targets these cells while giving CAR T cells. So it's a combinatorial approach, hoping that we can rescue also those patients with high disease burden. And of course, another important aspect that we are developing is how to enlarge the indications of the approach to other tumors that are expressing GD2. So we are about to open really in the next few days a phase one study to test the efficacy of this approach on brain tumors. So this will come really close. And we are already treating also especially bone sarcoma patients with this approach. So we have a small cohort of patients that are treated, and we are enlarging also this cohort. So for sure we are extending the approach to all the other tumors that are GD2, and it will be very exciting to see how the responses can change by one disease to the other.
Fantastic, Francesca. So congrats to you and all the team, Professor Locatelli, and all of you. Amazing results, amazing job. Thank you so much for accepting our invitation, and I hope perhaps to see you in another episode on other approaches, other cellular therapy approaches.
Thank you. That would be very awesome. And let me really thank all the team, because this is just an important message to obtain the very, very good results. It is essential to have a good collaboration with a great team. And really, the team at Bambino Gesù Children's Hospital is really wide, huge, with a lot of experiences. And only thanks to that and to the vision of our director, Professor Locatelli, we were able to obtain that. And this is important.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.